I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney visits the city's Port Richmond section with Labor Secretary Thomas Perez. First, New Jersey's Senate President Steve Sweeney surprised some yesterday with a plan for a state takeover of Atlantic City. He says politicians in Trenton are tired of bailing out the financially distressed city, and as WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the announcement came as an insult and a shock to city leaders.
At a press conference, local politicians called on the state to work with Atlantic City, not around it. Atlantic County freeholder Ernest Corsi says parts of the city are already under state control, like the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority and its tourism campaign, Do AC.
Who runs the convention center? State of New Jersey. Who runs CRDA? State of New Jersey. Who runs the Do Atlantic City? State of New Jersey. They have more on their hand than they can handle right now. Partner with us. Don't come in here with a hostile takeover, a plantation mentality.
Mayor Don Guardian echoed that indignation, and he invoked the state takeover of Camden more than a decade ago, saying leaders in Atlantic City are more willing to work with the state on solving the city's problems.
There's no fight here. We're not the Camden of 10 years ago. There is no war. We haven't declared war. We're sitting at the table to negotiate and to find the ways to move the city forward.
Rutgers professor Howard Gillette thinks the Camden comparison is right on.
Yes.
He says many people look at the Camden takeover as a mixed bag, that it didn't completely turn the city around, but
parts of the legislation that were relatively specified in terms of what money had to be spent remains the kind of foundation for the city's recovery, and that is money that were invested in the educational and medical institutions in the city.
When asked if he would fight the proposal in court, Mayor Guardian said it's too early to say. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
And this update just this evening, State Senate President Steve Sweeney introduced a bill giving the state vast power over Atlantic City, including the right to make most major decisions and to sell off city assets and land. State control would extend to government operations, as well as the right to sell municipally owned assets, including water, sewer, wastewater and stormwater facilities, as well as city-owned real estate. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney last month appointed a new city solicitor who inherited thousands of cases from the Nutter administration. Kenney's aides say that under the previous boss, the office that handles lawsuits involving the city started a legal fight that they now want nothing to do with. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, Kenney's team says the rocky start should not complicate the transition.
At any given time, Philadelphia is dealing with some 40,000 pending lawsuits, everything from property tax appeals to slip and fall cases to accusations of police misconduct. So it's easy to see how one would be overlooked during a transition, right? Well, those close to Kenney are being more cynical.
We suspect now that maybe it was because they were trying to get this case through. Obviously, stop and frisk was a policy of the last administration. It's not one of ours.
That's Kenney spokeswoman Lauren Hitt. She's talking about a complicated lawsuit about stop and frisk. It concerns whether the city should turn over data about pedestrian stops to the city's Public Defenders Association that asked for it. But Hitt says Kenney's people were never informed of that by the former city solicitor Shelley Smith's office.
They were just really unwilling to be helpful in any way, shape, or form.
It's a hot-button issue because Mayor Michael Nutter campaigned on a crime-fighting platform that included ramping up stop and frisk. Kenney, meanwhile, wants the policy to be radically reformed.
What we did was not political, and we didn't handle the transition politically either. And I wouldn't have withheld information because I knew from a new solicitor, I knew I was leaving. So what would be the point of that?
Smith says she wasn't hiding anything. There are lots of cases, and this is just one of them.
I would suggest that before anybody ever says that I'm not forthcoming, they talk to me directly.
How is Kenney's team ensuring that there aren't other lawsuits out there started during Nutter's tenure that they now want to pull?
Well, we're working diligently to make sure that nothing else like this is going on.
Insiders say the new city solicitor, Sozi Talanti, doesn't expect too many other major legal reversals, since most of the office's matters are not as intensely political. But again, he's only 1 month into the job. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
The U.S. Secretary of Labor came to Philadelphia today to check out a manufacturing plant in Port Richmond. WHYY's Tom McDonald was there.
Dave, Secretary Thomas Perez toured the PTR baler and compactor plant on Ontario Street. He actually started a welding robot as part of his review of the manufacturing facility in the heart of the city.
It's a great success story for Philadelphia that we can replicate with the right amount of training and the right amount of partnership with the federal, state government, and our local community, business community here. We're looking forward to doing this.
That's Mayor Jim Kenney, who says that the two can team up, city, state, and federal resources, and that would make things much better. The head of the plant is Michael Savage. He's president of PTR Baler and Compactor. He says they do everything they can to make sure their workers have the right training.
A lot of the training programs here that we talked about are partially subsidized by federal funds.
The company was heralded as a model for other manufacturers to follow during the stop by Secretary Perez. He walked through the factory saying that it's good to keep a middle class working in this country, and manufacturing is definitely a way to do it. Dave?
Turning to this evening's headlines, federal regulators cited Amazon.com this week for allegedly failing to report at least 26 workplace injuries at a Mercer County, New Jersey warehouse. According to the Philadelphia Business Journal, the Seattle-based online retailer has been under investigation by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration since July and now faces a $7,000 fine. OSHA also instructed the company to make safety reforms. Amazon plans to fight the allegations. An attorney representing Allentown's former city controller says his client will plead guilty to a charge announced today amid an FBI probe of government contracting in Pennsylvania's third largest city. According to defense attorney Eric Dowdle, Mary Ellen Colville will enter the plea to one count of conspiracy tomorrow in federal court. Prosecutors allege Colville with conspiracy to commit honest services fraud, alleging that between January 24th, 2014 and last month, she and others were involved in a scheme involving bribery and kickbacks. The city's former finance director pleaded guilty Monday to conspiracy to commit fraud, and a former city solicitor awaits sentencing. 26 degrees, partly cloudy at 6:13. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Clouding up overnight, falling back to 22 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high 38. For Friday, intervals of sun and clouds, high approaching 50 degrees. Still ahead, a Montreal Dance Company stint in Philadelphia is a homecoming for one dancer raised in a sports family.
I played everything, basketball, baseball, football. My dad, like, literally kicked me off of every team because that was horrible. And I just, like, wasn't focused. I would be, like, in the outfield, like, doing twirls and stuff.
The Newsworks Tonight team resumes play on WHYY-FM.
Bryn Mawr Rehab supports WHYY and for more than 40 years has been committed to delivering advanced physical rehab services to those recovering from serious illness or injury. Their team of specialists develops customized inpatient and outpatient treatment plans for a range of conditions, including brain injury, spinal cord injury, concussion, and stroke. Patients travel from across the country for Bryn Mawr Rehab Hospital's creativity and personalized therapeutic approach. Learn more, including real patient stories, at mainlinehealth.org/rehab.
The coming El Nino could bring Southern California the water it needs if we can hang on to it.
When it rains now, that water is largely lost to the LA River. What we're designing these projects to do and what the hope is that that water will be collected here and then returned to the groundwater system.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. That story next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Tonight at 6:30 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Personnel changes in Harrisburg could portend an increasingly polarized roster of lawmakers. Helping us to read the tea leaves is John Misick of Penn Live. John, welcome back to Newsworks Tonight.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Make the case.
All right. Well, you know, Dave, in just the last couple of weeks, we've seen some well-known moderate Republicans announce their retirements. Among them, familiar to your listeners, is State Representative Mike Verve from Montgomery County and Bill Adolf of Delaware County, the very powerful appropriations chairman of Delaware County as well. Out here in central Pennsylvania, we've seen Representative John Payne from Hershey announce his retirement, and Senator Patricia Vance, a Republican from Cumberland County, all of whom are practical and moderate and going to be compromise-minded. And as so often is the case, what will rush in to fill that vacuum most often are the extremes. And, you know, we have Scott Wagner of York County, the very noted sort of full-throated Tea Party Republican who is actually heading up the Senate Republicans' reelection effort for 2016. So it's a pretty sure bet that he will start recruiting like-minded candidates just as he did in 2014. Keep in mind, it is the season. Lawmakers will begin circulating their nominating petitions come January 26th for reelection. And, you know, now is the time when those who might have been thinking about a change in career or retirement or some other direction in life will be making those decisions. And the polarization with the debate over the state budget has certainly been a contributing factor to that.
And certainly for purposes of this conversation, we can even cite former Senate Republican Dominic Pileggi from Delaware County.
Indeed, we can. He might have been the sort of the earliest casualty of that. Senator Pileggi, now a Delaware County judge, was seen as entirely too accommodating to former Governor Tom Corbett and to interest in labor. And his ouster was engineered not too long after the start of the new legislative session back in January 2015.
Imagine the temerity to engage in bipartisan approach, Mont.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we're now in this age, I guess, when compromise is a dirty word, Dave, and it's unfortunate because, you know, that's how things get done.
You cited the budget impasse. Has that acted to exacerbate something that's already been taking place?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I mean, keep in mind, Dave, what had happened was is there had been a framework, that a new budget that had been negotiated back in November by centrist Republicans in the Senate and in the House with the active support of legislative Democrats and the assent of the Wolf administration. That deal was scuttled in the House by Tea Party conservatives. So, we do see that wing of the Republican Party exerting its influence just as it has nationally.
And as you refer to nationally, distrust in government and government dysfunction is now cited as the number one problem when pollsters go knocking. Is this just happening on the state level more and more as well, not just Pennsylvania, but across the land?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things rush to mind. There was a Franklin and Marshall poll, I think, back last October, where something like 39% of respondents identified state government as the principal problem facing the Commonwealth. Not high taxes, not poor schools, not crime, not terrorism, but their very own elected leaders. And there's a story, I think, the Washington Post back in 2014, citing some, I think it was some Pew Center data, that it actually found increased polarization in state legislatures across the land. So if there is some consolation in this, it is that Pennsylvania is not alone.
Are there exceptions to the rule?
There are. Louisiana, I think, was cited as one that was not quite as polarized. I think Connecticut might have been another. I don't have the research in front of me. But there were two or three that sort of had bucked that trend.
This doesn't bode well, though, for coming to accord on the ongoing budget stalemate.
Which one?
Yeah, which one, right?
Governor Wolf rolls out his second budget address, as amazing as that may seem, in less than a month's time, and they're still working on the first one. But in all seriousness, what this is guaranteed, Dave, with the stopgap that the governor signed back at the end of December, is that the negotiations now will drag on probably through the spring primary. Because if you thought Republican lawmakers were reluctant to vote on a tax increase when they weren't facing voters, they will be even more so when they are campaigning for reelection and fretting about a primary challenge from the right flank. The same holds true for Democrats who might be facing a stiff general election challenge come November. No Democrat has ever been voted out of office during a primary for supporting taxes, but they will have those worries to contend with come the fall.
Can you leave us with some good news?
We have our first snow of the year with the mid-70s weather we've been having through the Christmas time. It seemed that we might never have that. But in all seriousness, I am hoping that reality will sink in and that the technical challenges and logistical problems presented by trying to do two budgets simultaneously will cause some cooler heads to prevail.
Well, I presume most of your listeners, myself included, share that wish for a realism coming in the next weather forecast.
It would be great.
Thanks, John.
Anytime.
John Micek of Penn Live joining us on Newswork Tonight. In the wake of violent attacks, both in the U.S. and abroad, linked to Islamic extremists, many peaceful Muslims in America feel increasingly marginalized. Whether hearing stereotypes hurled on the campaign trail or getting accosted on the street, they feel misunderstood and persecuted. As WHYY's Kevin McCory reports, Muslim students at a Philadelphia public high school came together this week to commiserate and educate.
11th grader Ajanae Alexander can remember vividly the first time she felt truly victimized for her faith.
I was crossing Spring Garden and this man was on a skateboard and he told me, "Go home, you terrorist." But the question that was in my mind was, where is home? Is home the hospital that I was born in? Is home the house that I live in? Or where is home? Because this is my home. I was born in Philadelphia. I was born in the States. So where else is home?
Alexander was one of about a dozen Muslim students who gathered to share stories this week at an after-school forum held at the Academy at Palumbo High School in South Philadelphia. Before a library packed with peers of all backgrounds, the students emphasized the peaceful nature of the Islamic faith and decried those who prejudge them for their religion. Being harassed on the street unprovoked was a common tale. Fahima Shabarna is a sophomore at Palumbo.
On the other side of the street, someone started shouting at me, saying, "You, the one with the blue book bag, you effing terrorist." So it took me a long time to process what happened. And as I continued walking, I got into the train because I was going home, and I started crying because it impacted me so badly, and I started, like, shaking.
Freshman Ahmad Ahmad expressed frustration with the violent extremists who he says distort the Quran.
You don't say, "I'm a Muslim, that's why I'm shooting somebody," because if you were truly a Muslim, you wouldn't be out here shooting somebody because you know that that's not what we believe in.
Based on his skin tone, Ahmad says people often mistake him for being Latino.
People, even fellow Muslims, they're like, when they hear me speak Arabic, like, "Oh, into Arabi," or, "Oh, you Muslim?" I'm like, "Yeah." But they're like, "You just don't look like it," which is weird because I never knew a religion had a face. Like, I didn't know that you could look like something.
Donald Trump was on the mind of many of the students who spoke. As the Republican frontrunner in the presidential race, he's pledged to bar Muslims from entering the country. He's also seemed open to the possibility of a national registry for all Muslims currently here. Freshman Mariama Gakau can't believe it.
He's taking away my rights as well as giving leaders of ISIS momentum to recruit people inside of the United States.
Tasfia Ricci says she's able to brush off how the media reports on Muslims, but feels the toll it takes on others. Recently, she was watching TV with her family.
The way they were portraying Muslims were almost as if they were monsters, and they would attack you if you said anything to them. So I go back to my room highly disappointed, and my little sister comes up to me and says, "Apu," which means big sister, "I don't want to wear the hijab when I grow up." And I look at her and I'm like, "Why?" She says, "They will hurt me." And I'm like, "Who do you mean by they?" And they're like, "The people on the TV who said they hate Muslims."
In contrast, many students praised how differently it feels at Palumbo, which is a very diverse magnet school. Nadine Alberkawi says it's a refuge from a larger world that often leaves her feeling less than human.
I think to be generalized against every freaking day of my life is tiring. It's stupid. And I think that at some point, nobody listens to when you say that this is tiring. Nobody cares anymore because you're a terrorist at the end of the day. So who cares, right? So to have a room full of people that actually listen right now is not something that you get every day. And that's cool. So
for WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
The Prince Theater in Philadelphia is hosting a dance company for Montreal for a week of performances. And from WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that it's a homecoming for one of the company's dancers who grew up in Southwest Philly.
Mark Caserta grew up in a loud Italian household in Southwest Philadelphia.
It was like a rough neighborhood that I lived in. It wasn't the prettiest or cleanest or like nicest, but I think that helped me become like more determined.
His father, also named Mark Caserta, is a lifelong athlete, having spent most of his adult life coaching sports. Right now he coaches softball for Penn State Brandywine. So the son says the father always wanted him to be an athlete.
I played everything, basketball, baseball, football. My dad, like, literally kicked me off of every team because I was horrible, and I just, like, wasn't focused. I would be, like, in the outfield, like, doing twirls and stuff, I mean, he was like, get out of here, you're done, like, just go dance. And I would be like, I don't care, because I like dancing anyway.
Caserta, the younger Caserta, got into Philadelphia's High School of Creative and Performing Arts, then the University of the Arts, and then he danced professionally in New York. Now 28, he tours the world with Le Ballet Jazz de Montreal, a modern dance company based in Canada. As for Caserta Sr., he couldn't be prouder of his son, even if he doesn't play baseball.
I think he played 1 year with us, and he said, Dad, this ain't me. I don't like baseball. It's boring. From then on, he was a little performer, and boom, he got older, and then he's a professional now. He's there at the pinnacle. I mean, he's doing fantastic. Travels all over the world.
Caserta did get an athlete in his family. His daughter, Mallory, was the one who excelled at sports. And 2 weeks ago, she gave Caserta his first grandchild. This week, everybody is coming downtown to see the dancer of the family perform on stage. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
And finally this evening, beer aficionado alert. The World Beer Cup is set to hit Philadelphia this spring. The Craft Brewers Conference will close out its stay in the city from May 3rd to the 6th with what it hails as the Olympics of beer. The World Beer Cup began in 1996, and it's returned every 2 years to crown the top brewers from across the globe. 2014's competition in Boulder, Colorado, was host to a record-breaking 1,403 breweries from 58 countries. Now, we're hoping for some home field advantage, since Philadelphia was just a drop in the bucket among the list of 2014 winners, with the locals at Iron Hill Brewery as the only Philly presence. They took home 6 awards, including the gold in the American-style Brett Beer category and the Brewery Champion title for Small Brew Pub. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from our own Brett, Mr. Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Tomorrow evening, we'll meet a Wilmington artist who paints portraits of the city's homicide victims as a healing gift to their families. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Sunday, January 24th at 2 p.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, videos, and all open house dates can be found online at mfriends.org. That's mfriends.org.
On the next edition of The Pulse, we're heading to the library.
You say, I'm going to library school, and everybody's like, well, aren't libraries kind of over? You know, what are you going to be doing?
This is exactly what we're going to find out.
Now let's take a look at what a captured Twitter feed looks like.
Preserving the history of movements born on social media, lending much more than books, taking learning to new levels, The Pulse checks out the libraries of the future. Friday morning at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Marco Werman. People in Europe worry that this young Syrian man might be a terrorist. He says he doesn't want to fight anymore. He fled Syria rather than join ISIS, the Assad army, or the U.S.-backed rebels.
I don't want to die in our country for who? For Bashar al-Assad or Free Army? They are all them criminals.
Opting out of the war in Syria on the world.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Stay with us next for a look at the day's business news on Marketplace. 26 degrees, partly cloudy on Independence Mall, 24 degrees in Wilmington, falling back to 22 degrees overnight under increasingly cloudy skies. Tomorrow, partly sunny, Thursday's high 38. Friday, a mix of sun and clouds, high near 50. Saturday, rain in the morning, remaining cloudy up to 48 degrees. Sunday, partly sunny, high 40. And then ahead to Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Sunny skies, but chilly. Monday's high 33. It's 6:30.